ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Website Builder podcast and YouTube channel. This week I've got an awesome guest. I'm chatting with Marty. Some of you may recognize him from some of the Facebook groups. I know he's quite active in lots of them, and he's participating in quite a few of the discussions. Marty makes his full-time income through his affiliate websites, and he's been doing this now for around 3 years full-time. Interestingly, he only started like a year or two before that while he was working a job. So he progressed very quickly from starting, job, and then full-time. He's now what I would consider a digital nomad, in that he's traveling around whilst working on his sites. He doesn't have like a fixed location. We cover a ton of different things in today's episodes, but in particular, his approach to keyword research and keyword selection. We specifically talk about keyword golden ratio and how he's trying to follow that method, and how he's tweaked it, and how it's changed, and what he does differently, and also how he's trying to follow John Dykstra and his method of posting lots of content, getting out of the weeds of analysis paralysis a little bit, and just publishing lots of good quality content. We also talk about how he manages to stay productive and focused, which I think is massive. I don't think enough of us talk about like productivity or being focused. So I think that's a good part of the interview today. And then finally, we talk about Web Core Vitals, and specifically how Marty's able to get his websites to pass Web Core Vitals, even though they're monetized with display ads through Mediavine. So it's full of actionable tips and insights, and I think you'll enjoy it and you'll get lots out of this. I know I certainly did. So without further ado, let's get into it.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Hey, Marty, how's things? Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Good afternoon. It's morning here, but good afternoon to you. I'm doing well. Appreciate your time.
It is. It's afternoon here. It's almost 4 p.m. in the afternoon. It's boiling here in the UK. We're having this mini heat wave kind of thing going on. We're just not used to it. People in the UK are not built for heat. So like I'm boiling, I'm sweating. And where in the world are you? Because it's even hotter where you are, I think.
Yeah, I'm in Playa del Carmen, Mexico, actually.
In Mexico, right?
Yep, it's pretty hot here. It's already hot, and it's getting hotter for the summer season.
Wow, nice, awesome. Well, you're obviously traveling around. I think you've got a super interesting story to tell in terms of you're a full time affiliate marketer. You are using that income to travel around, and I know you plan on traveling a little bit away from the heat in Mexico soon. So, for people who are not don't know you very well or not familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, like what you used to do before this, how you got started in this, just like what's your journey been like?
Sure, absolutely. So, and it's interesting because I'm the only person in my whole the whole my whole family tree who got a college degree and worked professionally. But so I was an electrical engineer. My last job was working on basically electronics and some low-level code for electronics boards, basically, and as well as, troubleshooting and things like that. So I've done a few different jobs like that. The issue was that over time, I was just really unhappy in my job at different companies. But the lack of freedom altogether as well, you have your ideals about what you'd love to do once you get to the point where you get this nice job. But the reality, unfortunately, a lot of times is really disappointing. And I was burning out very badly. So in 2017, I had tried before, but didn't know what I was doing. I tried starting a niche website in the past, but it flopped because I went about it the totally wrong way. And I took a course from Doug Cunnington and built my first website in 2017, built a second one in another topic that I know very well. I believe that was 2018. So towards the end of 2019, I left my job and I'm working for myself now.
That's quite quick. If you started your successful site in 2018 and then you finished in 2019. So huge congratulations on that. One thing which I just want to ask about, because I don't think we talk enough about failures, is what happened with that first site? Why do you think it failed? What did you learn that you then took into your next site?
Sure. Yeah, there's a few things that stand out very clearly to me. For example, the niche was super competitive. It was a test supplements for men. And the monthly search volume for stuff like that, a lot of stuff is just insane. So the competition level was brutal. And I didn't realize at the time, you have an ideal, but if you don't understand the nuts and bolts behind how you can make something work, you don't understand why it won't work. And it's at least I gave it a shot. I learned some stuff from it, but I knew that I didn't. Pretty quickly, I realized that going into something like that without some kind of better understanding was not a good plan.
Yeah, no. And obviously, that was, I imagine, crossing over into the your money, your life space as well. And
yeah,
I'm sure you didn't understand EAT and all how that worked either.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So I asked this question to everyone, is that how you made your first dollar online, or did you make your first dollar online way before this doing something different?
Oh, I did it with a niche site. Yeah. I had dipped my toes into drop shipping a little bit, but it wasn't the best model. One of those was the Allied Express model. And it was from a guy who built a little course, but then he disappeared. And I don't think his approach was very good. So that didn't make any money. I also tried traditional, they call it high ticket drop shipping, but I picked a bad niche, I think. So that didn't pan out. So my first dollar, to answer your question, was as an Amazon affiliate at the time.
How did that feel when the first sale came through?
Yeah, it's true what they say. I've heard some people like Authority Hacker, those guys talk about how important that first dollar is. And it's very exhilarating. It's kind of like a little bit of validation that, thinking about it, hearing about it is one thing, to actually seeing you get some money is a different thing. The reality of it, it feels very good. And it gives you that extra look, puts a little bit of wind behind yourselves, as they say, to have you keep going. Because it's kind of, for me personally, it was, it validated that this was possible, number one. And number two, that if I can try to keep doing more of the same so that I can make it go up, increase the amount,
For sure. Awesome. Okay. So I didn't realize it was that quick that you started and then left your job. Did you move away fairly quick? I mean, did you move? I'm assuming you must have moved to Mexico for cost of living reasons, or was it? Is that how you were able to give up your job quicker, because it's cheaper to live there then?
I did not have to, fortunately. That was kind of like baseline plan, but it wasn't a requirement. I was already living below my means in the U.S., which because I knew that was an important factor, because you can't, if you're paying for your Ford BMW every month and all this other stuff. Like a lot of Americans tend to spend a lot of money, unfortunately, you know. I didn't want to have to be in a situation where I had to deal with that financial burden as well. So I had the option to go a lot of places, but it is very helpful because it is very helpful to be somewhere where your cost of living is lower because, number one, there's risk involved in making money online. So, for example, the Amazon commission cuts happened to me. I was one of those people who got hit hard by that. So yeah. I was in a better position when I live somewhere where it doesn't cost me as much to live. But it wasn't my original goal. I ended up here because I had a friend here, and he recommended I come and visit, you know.
And then you never left, by the sound of it.
Yeah. Been here a couple of months, yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your portfolio sites, like how many you've got and, you know, what that generally looks like? You don't have to share revenue details or anything like that. So just what sites they are, how old they are for the one from 2018, and just give us an overview of what your portfolio looks like.
Sure. So I built the original one, which is in a moderately, it's probably somewhat more competitive niche now. Okay, I have the first one, my original one, it's got a little bit of, I think it's about 120 posts now. And I have a second one that I built towards, I think it was the end of, was it somewhere around the late 2018. Okay. And I ended up buying another one from a lady in the UK who was selling hers. It was a small one that she built. I changed it, cleaned it up, and did some work on it, things like that. I was considering selling that one, although I'm reevaluating what I can do with it. I think I have another idea. I do some other for another reason. But after getting into this, after earning more with ad revenue, and following John Dykstra and some other people, I was thinking about, you know, my goal is going to be to grow informational content sites and the ad revenue. So I have a new site. So this would be site number four that is purely informational content. It's brand new. So it's, you know, it's just getting off the ground.
Awesome. That's great. Are you doing anything different for this new site? I guess we'll talk about specifics in a second, yeah. Like what you've learned, but are you doing anything majorly different, or is it just more of the same for this new site?
So I will say several things are different. Primary thing being that this site is all the content is written by other parties, whereas my main two sites, I've done it all myself for whether I wanted to or not. So this is the first time that I'm using content writers for that, as well as it looks like I'm probably going to go ahead and move ahead with the topic clusters and using a tool like Keyword Cupid as well.
Yep.
Let's see. There's some little bits and pieces that things that you think about in terms of efficiency, things like that, that I'm going to do is there as well. I'm also planning on using hiring an editor and someone to work on images. Graphics design, I guess, would be the correct name.
Okay. Interesting that you mentioned that you've written all of the content yourself up until now. Are these sites and niches that you were passionate about or knew a lot about, or have you educated yourself whilst writing them?
Yes, as a matter of fact, not the first one. The first one is like a general one that's pretty common stuff. But my second one, which is, I think it's at about... So this is somewhere around, I think I'm up to 80 posts in it now. So it's more hobby, technical related stuff where that level of knowledge, I don't think anybody else could write the content like I do.
Yeah.
I have extensive knowledge in that niche quite a bit because I even make my own diagrams and things like that because it's very applicable. And depending on the niche, a lot of times people look for very, very clear explanations of things. And that's, I think that's one reason my site, that site is doing well. I have very clear diagrams. I break stuff down into a way that everybody can read it and understand, you know.
Yeah. Taking the complex and making it simple,
yeah, exactly.
Easy to understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I've seen the quality of the content out there with competing sites. And, wow, sometimes it's so bad, it's hard to believe.
No, that makes sense. I guess that comes with your background, right? Being an engineer in terms of making complex things simpler and easier to understand, which kind of leads me into like a couple of the next points are you very like data organized and data driven with your approach to sites, or are you like John Dykstra, who's not data driven and not organized, still hugely successful, but the more of these interviews I do, I find people fall into like one of two camps. You either just do tons and tons of stuff and not worry about the data, or you look at all of the data. And I'm a data person, but I'm interested to hear with your background which one you are.
Sure. I think I was more data oriented in the beginning, but it's hard to argue with somebody like John who gets results.
Yeah.
And the simplicity of it, it's very appealing to me. So I think I'm moving away a bit from data as a primary guide to more of a basic process like John is using and some other people are using. So yeah. I will still say I won't be without data, but I don't dwell on it. I don't make it the main focus from the get-go. Maybe it's better to say using data to help get the ideas and keywords the best data I can get to do that, and then take it from there and just repeat the same process.
Yeah, you can fall into the trap of analysis paralysis, right?
Yeah.
Where you just got so much data in the end, you're like, I'm talk yourself out of ideas, and you talk yourself out of niches and keywords, and like, oh, this is, you end up doing nothing. So, okay.
Yeah.
Talking about keywords, it's a massive subject, and I know you've tried a couple of different methods, and you talked about how you've taken Doug's course. Can you, just as an overall, like before we get into the specifics, can you give us like an overall understanding of how you are approaching your keyword research?
Sure. So I was still using KGR until, X number of months ago. Let's just say last year, for example. Because now sometimes I'll get massive quantities of keywords and export them in the keyword tool that I use more often. I noticed that once I had more experience, I kind of cut down on the KGR, using KGR, and I go more towards long tail keyword opportunities, or in other words, the ones that are getting ignored for the most part. So now I'm more towards going for the low hanging fruit. It's always nice if I could pick something that has a decent estimated volume, but I don't get hung up on it much anymore because I keep seeing so many home runs come out of even the low competition ones. I really do. That's currently where I'm at now. So I basically look for low competition stuff. I get a lot of keywords. I look for low competition ones, but I also try to do things like go after frequently asked questions or autocomplete, auto-suggest results and scrape those from Google, and go through those as well as I try to read a lot of articles and learn about other approaches, because there's other stuff out there. Occasionally I pull stuff from competing sites too.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So you mentioned search volume there. Do you have a preference or a take on zero search volume keywords? I know it's a bit of a hot topic right now.
Yeah, because I know a guy from where I was living, Evan, and he had written an article about zero volume keywords for Doug's site, Doug's Huntington site. So basically, I don't get hung up on the search volume anymore, unless it's a particular keyword or something like that. But at this point, I'll go for the quote zero ones because I know I'll get some volume out of it.
Does it have to make sense? Because I've seen that. Like, if it's got zero search volume and it makes sense, like you think someone in the niche would be searching for it, then write it. But that's the approach, really. If it makes sense, then write
exactly.
It.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I tried to think about what it is, for the best I can, try to think about the search intent and see if it makes sense. And if it does, I'll go for it, pretty much.
I think the other things to keep in mind is that that's just the one primary or potentially primary keyword. I was running through a search plan with a customer this morning. One of their feedback was this search for term only has 20 searches a month. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but like that's just the primary one.
Yeah.
And then when we looked up some of the competitors, they had an article on the same topic. And then according to SEMrush, that one article is driving 600 visitors a month. I'm like, but the primary keyword only gets, you know, hardly any monthly searches. So I think you're right in that if it makes sense, write it and take the monthly search volume with a grain of salt. It's a good indicator, but it's not the be all and end all of everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. What tools do you use? You mentioned KGR there, which I've used myself in the past, and it's very spreadsheet heavy. I know they've got tools like, I think it's allintitle.co, I think it's like a SaaS tool that you put in all your keywords and it does all the stuff for you. Do you use any tools apart from, or do you use any tools to do your keyword research?
Yeah, I had Scrapebox for a while. I don't know if you ever heard of Scrapebox, but it's a really flexible tool. You can do things like scrape email addresses, URLs, all kinds of stuff. But I've been using it for scraping massive quantities of all entitled keyword lists. You know, I use it. It does require proxies, though.
How does that work?
So basically, it has a little add-on that where you can use an operator. You know how you can enter something like all entitled colon in the address bar in Chrome. You can basically import a whole list of keywords and add that operator to the whole list in bulk. And it'll cycle through the keywords using proxies and do the calls using the proxies. So even if I'm not, even if you're in a different geographic location, the proxies, you'll get some data back. Of course, it's still, you know, it's Allen title is not a perfect value, but it's usually ballpark. And, I have another tool that is from a little small website from a guy in the U.S. It's called Scrapers and Bots. And I have a tool that it's supposed to scrape all entitled, but I've had issues with it when I'm not in the U.S. And depending on your internet connection and things like that. But anyway, I can scrape the auto-suggest stuff. Like when you begin to type a few letters, how you have entries that pop up for common searches that people do, it can scrape all of those in mass.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
The thing about I had somebody before, like allintitled.co was a tool you could use. I paid someone on Upwork to make me a tool, so similar to what you use Scrapebox for to automatically pull out the All Entitled stuff. And it was at that point I had the tool back, and I said to the guy, "Great, I'm going to test it." And then I tested it in his tool and then in my browser, and the results were like wildly different. Like the All Entitled was like 50 on one and 150 on the other one. I was like, dude, what you've made just doesn't work. Like, what have you made? This is not right. But it turns out like the results can vary sometimes. Like most of the time it's okay, but sometimes like massively depending on where you are. Like me and you could do the same All Entitled search right now and get wildly different results because we're both in different countries.
Yep. 100%. And, I actually ran this test one time. I was using proxies. I used, I think I ran like five geographic locations. The IP location of these proxies were supposed to be like, one was the East Coast of the U.S. Excuse me, two in the East Coast, one was in the West Coast. I think one was somewhere in between, maybe one or two in between, something like that. So they weren't always all that close. A couple times, sometimes there was a big difference. I did about 500 keywords and I compared them, and it was just interesting to see that I had this idea after scraping a lot of all entitled data over time that I need to kind of give it some fudge factor, as we say, like some rough percentage where I have some leeway up or down, because I think that what happened was what I realized after doing this so many times was using the KGR process, it gets you in the ballpark, but I was highlighting spreadsheet data, the cells, based on a color, based on the KGR ratio. But if the all entitled, if it's going to have some, if the tolerance is going to be different, that means that I'm going to be ignoring, I'll unintentionally be ignoring a lot of potential keywords. And I realized I had been doing that the whole time. So I changed my ratio. I made it higher. But now I'm mostly trying to approach it with what I'm saying. more like it with a, how can I say, a overview approach, where I'm not as focused on things like all, as focused about things like all entitled, but more the general aspect of all entitled low. That's nice, but you know, I don't dwell on that too primarily. I try to look at other factors as well.
Okay, so all entitled just gets you into the ball, like it makes the shortlist for you, I guess. Then.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's what that's what I would have said, because I can just in mass, I could flag some general range with all entitled is low, and helps me narrow down pretty quickly. You know,
once you have that list, then I know that you. Well, I'm assuming that you Google them individually.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like, well, so you've got your shortlist from KGR. You then start Googling the keywords. What are you looking for when you Google it? Like, what tells you that it's a good keyword to keep versus one that you shouldn't keep, even if the all entitled is low, for example?
Sure. So, you know, search intent is a big thing. And how search intent, you know, you have to try to use your best judgment and say, what is good, this search term? What is it people are most likely looking for? What are they expecting? But for me personally, at this point in time, now I'm looking more, how is the Google algorithm treating this? How, because I've noticed in the past that, say I have this potential keyword, the results and the search results, what's being presented by the algorithm is not what I would have expected. So I realized pretty quickly that I had to be careful and not make too many assumptions. So I looked to see, is this returning similar concepts in the top 10 that I would expect for this term or not? If it's not, it may not be worth your time, because if it's going to be treated as something very different, what's the point, you know? Also, I'll use as far as the competition, checking the competition, I use, as a rough guy, I'll use an extension like, let's say, SEO Quake in Chrome.
Yeah.
And it'll show you some of the stats of the what's ranking in the first page of the sites there. So you can kind of use that as a guide. And if you see some weaker sites ranking top 10, as a general rule, that often means that you stand a good chance as well if you do things properly.
Okay. Are you looking for things like user-generated content or forums? I know Ben Adler's tool, Keyword Chef, is it's amazing for pulling out those kinds of keywords. If you find, like, you know, a Quora post or a forum post, you get excited and think, yes, like, this is good.
Yeah, exactly. Because I've had the parallel experience of stuff like what Ben Adler is talking about, and some other people I mentioned that I've multiple times I've had especially in my second site, where there's someone asking a question about something technical. If the search results are like Reddit and some forum, a lot of times that search query isn't being covered very well. So it tends to be that a forum is being ranking where there's really not that much information. It's just a thread in a forum, and there's a little bit of somewhat relevant information in that thread, and that's being displayed by Google's algorithm. So most of the time, that's a sign of a good opportunity. Just like you said, I'll often say, oh, wow, okay, this, now that I have some experience, I can say, I can look at that and say, this is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Whenever I find those kinds of things now, I'm like, this is great. And if I can pull together a plan that has loads of them, I'm like, this is going to work out really well. This leads me on to the next point quite nicely, actually, because my next point I want to talk about are things like, you've coined the term, the phrase in the past, like, dumb keywords. We talked a little bit about it before the call. You know, for example, some people search for how big is a 17-inch computer monitor. Like, it sounds like a dumb question, like a dumb search term, but people search for it. And then, like, my experience is these typically are the ones which are pulled, like, have lots of user-generated content. Like, nobody's created a full-on article about how big is a 17-inch monitor. How do you go about making sure that you answer the question in as, you know, as much depth? Like, I mean, it can be answered fairly easy, but to appease the Google gods, it's got to be a certain length, right? Like, how do you decide what should go into that piece of content then, when, you know, the question is essentially a dumb question, or a question that could be answered in a sentence or two? How do you determine what goes in there, what to put in, what to leave out? Like,
So my first thought would be I'll generally look at the search results and try to use those as a guide as far as the word count length goes. But let's just say, as a general rule, 1,000 to 1,200 words maybe is a good starting, you know, something to kind of start with and adjust if necessary. And as far as, as far as the content, that's a really good question, because when I was a beginner, I was guilty of being one of the people who didn't really know how to fill that space in an article. So I'll put, I hate to use the word, but fluff.
Yeah.
I was just really stressing out over it. I knew it wasn't very good. So, but what I do now is I use subtopics, which are actually just additional keywords, relevant keywords that they add value to the article and they answer additional related questions that people may have interest in. So I'm not stuffing anything, by the way. I should be clear about that. They're relevant secondary keywords that I can use as subtopics. So that's what I do, like 99% of the time, yeah.
How do you have a go-to method of coming up with those secondary questions? Or are you grouping them together in your initial research when you've got your big list of keywords? Are you grouping them together then? Or you got the title, this is what I want to write about, and now I'm going to look for secondary keywords for this article?
Yeah, it was the latter originally. So it was until recently, it was because I'm just not going to transition to something different. But so I would do the keyword research, find the topic, parent keyword, the focus keyword, the main keyword. And then I would just pick out some relevant ones that made sense to use in an article from that same keyword list that I exported in my tool. But from here on out, I'm going to work more on using a tool like Keyword Cupid that groups them based on data, the interpreting the what's best as far as how the data shows what Google's picking from the search results, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a lot more sense, because I realized, you know, light bulb came on in my head the other day. I thought, well, this is kind of doing the same thing, but better. That, you know, that same thing that I was doing before, but it's actually better because it's based on data as opposed to me just picking the stuff.
Yeah. We use Keyword Cupid a lot. Yeah. Like we've spoken to Leo a couple of times, the creator of the software, and he's an incredible guy. Like his knowledge, he's a data scientist by trade. So, like we were doing something similar to what you used to do, or, you know, your original method, where we would try and figure out what the keywords should be, like the clusters should be. And then we started using Keyword Cupid, and we're like, why would we ever go back to us trying to figure out what it should be anymore, when you can literally just let the data decide based on, you know, what Google clusters together and basically what they tell you is the right way to do it. And sometimes it doesn't make sense, and you definitely have to go back through and sense check it, because the tool will group together keywords, and as you go through as a human, you're like, that doesn't belong in there. Something in his tool says it does, but, you know, from a user perspective, like, nah, that doesn't, and you can take it out. But on the whole, I think that's, it's a great way of clustering them together and grouping
them. Yeah, I think it's nice to have that additional way, because I'm always hoping to learn more to get better, but, you know, I've had a suspicion for a while that just picking them out by myself hurt my search result rankings at times, but I can't prove it. But it's just strong intuitive feeling, you know. So this is a way, so I can at least say, well, I've done the best I can given a new approach. So perhaps if this doesn't work out as well as I hope, then I can work on other factors. But I really like the Keyword Cupid too. And like you said, he's a really nice guy. I spoke with him myself, chatted with him a little bit when I first started playing around with it. He was very helpful.
That surprised me. It feels like everyone I speak to has spoken to him personally. I'm like, that's not how you run a SaaS business. But the guy must just like love chatting to his clients or people who subscribe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So once you've got all that, then, so we've gone through the keyword research. You've done all the KGR. You've got your list of topics. You've kind of shortlisted them. You've now gone a step further and checked the SERPs. Now you have your list. And I guess this question is kind of redundant because you've done all your own content, but like, how do you then turn them into briefs? Or I'm assuming, well, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're creating your own content, I'm assuming you're tackling them one by one and making like briefs as you go, or do you not even make briefs? You just say, here's the title, here are my subheadings, and I'm just going to go at this one today.
So yeah, I can answer that pretty quickly. So if it's for myself, content that I'm still currently writing, those sites, I'll put it in a spreadsheet. So it is basically, I do content planning, and like I'll have a number, I'll keep track of what number this article is going to be, and then I'll have the main keyword. I have a little bit of data, maybe the, I'll make my estimated word count, I'll plan that, I'll put that in there, and then I'll put the, some, a list of additional keywords, as well as, I'll also put people also ask in there sometimes. Yeah. And I'll pick from those, but if it's for a content writer, then I'll do a formal outline in, say, Microsoft Word or Google Docs, where I have it all laid out in the same structured format.
Do you lay it out heading by heading, or do you just give them the overarching topics and say, please include this and go for it? Or do you literally lay out like subheading one, subheading two?
Yeah, I do lay those out, but I do try to let them mention, of course, for some things, you know, have a little bit of flexibility as far as if they want to add additional ones, for example. But I do try to say that these are important. But if you need to add more or something like that, you know, yeah, please feel free.
Okay, awesome. Well, I think this is the next bit I want to talk about is something which I think is super important. And you mentioned it before the call to bring up, because I don't think people are talking about this. And especially if you're writing your own content and doing, you know, you're busy like yourself, is time management and productivity. Like, I feel like I've asked loads of people the question, how do you stay motivated? How do you get yourself to, you know, write all this content if they're writing it themselves? But I feel like I've never asked them the right question until you mentioned it before the call. Like, and I think the right question is, how do you manage your productivity and your working day? Like, how is it structured? What apps do you use? Do you use any tools? Like, how do you make sure when you are working, you are like laser focused?
Well, So I guess I would kind of look at it as that there are several different things going on. So your work environment is a big deal. So for me personally, if there's a lot of outside noise, people moving around and things like that, you have your physical distractions in front of you. So I use noise canceling headphones and background sound a lot of the time. That helps, especially the background sound can block out sound that my headphones can't cancel, even though I have really, really nice noise canceling headphones. It also helps me focus a little bit. So that takes care of a little bit of that. I try to
What is background sound, by the way? What is that? Is it like when you say that, I just imagine like the sound of an office or something, but maybe that's not it.
As far as what I listen to, or you mean what's around me?
Yeah, well, what do you listen to? So when you say you've got your noise canceling and then you listen to background sound? Like,
I know different people have different preferences, but it could be like a washing machine, clothes washer, because it's very rhythmic and it's very soothing. Or it could be some sounds of nature. It could be a jacuzzi or all this stuff where it masks out sound, but it's also very, how can I say, vanilla in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes people use the term white noise. White noise technically is a certain type of noise pattern with a certain frequency response, but you use that kind of as white noise, as people would say. It could be a fan sound, something like that, where you don't really think about what's around you anymore. You don't hear it, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed. But you also start thinking more about what's in front of you, ideally. Just whatever you feel happy, whatever you feel like works best for you.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Awesome. Okay. What else do you do?
So, and I've not always, it's really hard sometimes. I've learned that it's hard to stay focused and stuff. So, usually, you know, I was making to-do lists, but I'm reading some books related to productivity and time management. I'm kind of going to reevaluate that. But I would make to-do lists and try to set those as goals for the day or the week. Usually I would say week, because stuff does come up sometime during the week. You know, yeah. Planning. I was using an email checker extension in my Chrome browser. And at one point it was checking emails too often. I would get a little distracted pop up. So I changed that time to a lot bigger time in between that it checks. I changed that. I'm going to change that and make it even more. So at this point, I read a recommendation about you know, I get reader comments and I get emails and reader comments sometimes. WordPress will send you a notification, email. So I was being bad about answering those during different times of the day. So now what I've done was I've set a timer. So I'll give myself 21 minutes to try to answer as many emails and comments as I can, say in the morning, for example. And then once that timer stop is gone, once the timer has elapsed, I'll just stop. And I can do it later in the day, but I don't spend any more time on it during the day because that was really just interrupting my work a lot.
Yeah. Why 21 minutes? That's very specific. Why the what?
You know, I have to go back. I'm trying to figure out where I was wondering about that too. I think it might be from a book that I bought, but I haven't read yet. But okay. That's a good question. I don't know where that number came from yet. I'll find out though.
Yeah, I 100% know where you're coming from. I can start some days and the night before I've psyched myself up and I'm saying, in my head, I'm like, right, tomorrow morning, I'm getting up early and I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And I'm going to, by dinner time, I'm going to be here and I'm going to feel great. And then I come in and I open up the inbox. I'm like, oh, there's 20 emails to go through. Oh, they won't take long. And before I know it, it's like 11 o'clock. I'm like, I've got nothing of my to-do list done today yet.
Yep.
So I can relate to that. Is there anything else you use or anything else you do to...
Well, I actually just installed a website, an extension called, I think it's called Stay Focused. There was another one I had, but I just changed it just the same day. What I'm going to do now, starting today, as a matter of fact, is I'm going to set a daily work period time range of hours where, except for breaks, I'm going to block stuff like YouTube and Facebook and all that so that I could always go around it, but the idea being to help keep me stay focused on being productive in my work and at least remind me that, hey, I did this for a reason. Maybe I can put this off until later. I'm block keeping myself from wanting to do this temptation of wasting time for a reason. So
yeah,
that, and I had some people here that I met that did the, I think it's called Pomodoro technique. I don't use that yet. We use a period of working time and then a break and then more. I'm going to learn about that, but I'm just basically I schedule tasks, goal, kind of like a daily goals is on the big picture for that day. And then I try to get my emails out of the way in the morning. Sometimes you can't get it all. That happens, especially the ones I get sometimes. Wow. So I'll wait about that. If I can't get it all done in a reasonable time, like I said, I'll put it off until later that day or even the next morning because nobody's going to die if I don't answer a comment,
Yeah, no. they're lucky you're answering them, to be honest.
Yeah, because actually that's another topic, but some people are not always nice. They're not polite enough and it doesn't really encourage me. Most people are very nice when they have a question, but not always. And that I don't care for at all.
No. Okay. One other thing which I wanted to chat to you about, because you've just gone through this with your own sites and it's a big thing right now, is Web Core Vitals. You mentioned before the call that you've got a ton of experience like optimizing your own sites. What can you share? Like, what's your experience being, like tips and tricks and everything to do with that?
Sure. And I've been in so many Facebook groups because it's died down a little bit now, but let me tell you about even until recently, wow, these people were just really worked up about this, worked up in a frenzy about it. So basically, I need to also say as a background, two of my websites have display ads, Mediavine. So we're not even talking about a site with no ads at all. I do have ads and I was able to pass web vitals and Search Console. So what I started working this, I remember reading a website that kind of helped send me down the right road originally. So what I found out was that, long story short, is that, in WordPress, majority of the issue comes from these plugins that we use because when you install a plugin in WordPress, if you're going to do something in a page or post, it's often, there can be quite a bit of CSS code and even JavaScript, and is loaded in that page. If it's loaded before things like the first featured image or the first amount of text or whatever. If you were to see it, for example, evaluated in the page speed test tool, you'll see a lot of times stuff get flagged and a warning about a render blocking code, which, you know, code that's loaded before the page can be rendered, and the user starts seeing something. So that code can be pretty big sometimes. Unfortunately, there can be a lot of bloat. It's almost always related to plugins. So I found out that a lot of that stuff is loaded where it's not even needed. Sometimes all across your website, say, for example, you have a contact form plugin. Well, it turns out that plugin, unfortunately, their design is not always very good, and they'll load code all the way across the site instead of only on that one page where it's been used.
So yeah, that's only on one page.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like a traditional page builder like Elementor, I used to have that, Elementor Pro. I was using that on my homepage and some category pages, paginated category pages. The bloat on that thing was pretty bad. I could never get my page speed score that great with that. A page builder loads quite a bit. It was like over 200 kilobytes of CSS by itself. 95% of that was not used. So what I kind of learned was that I needed to deal with this bloat. So what I was able to do was to, I have a very efficient, lightweight, responsive theme, which is, I use GeneratePress, very happy with that. Because I tested that, and I tested Astra. They're both pretty good, but I prefer GeneratePress over the two, out of the two, excuse me. So then I used a plugin I'm using Asset Cleanup, the pro version, paid version, on pages and posts where I don't need that plugin, a plugin's functionality, I can just simply block it from being loaded there. And
how does that work? Is that just simply a tick box, or do you have to know the code to put in there?
No, you don't have to know the code. I mean, there's other ways to do this because you can use expressions sometimes, or you can use a general rule like across the site or only on posts or only on pages, yada yada. But what I do is at this point when I publish a new post, I just scroll down to the bottom and there's some tick boxes. And there is a little bit of learning curve with these kinds of plugins, this one or Perf Matters being the main competitor. So I do know what plugins I'm looking for. Say, for example, AAWP, if I'm not using it in informational content, I have it. I do not load it. I don't load any of that CSS or JavaScript for the plugin. And also, I have some custom CSS on my site, nothing like too big, but those are called hard-coded. So you can also block that where it's not needed. Like, say, for example, I custom color some tables. And if I'm not using that table, I don't need to load the code because it's just bloat. It's just more stuff to slow it down. So I know I can do that as well. I can go tick the box. But a lot of times it's not even that hard. I can set a rule across the site. So by default, it's turned off. It won't load that code that I don't need. However, I can enable it on a particular post or page. So I can kind of do the inverse.
Yeah.
And you can, exactly. Or you can do it by the URL. You can use a keyword in URL or some other kind of expression. You know, I think sometimes they're called regex. So you have a variety of ways to do that. I mean, there is a little bit of work involved. When you first start trying to figure this stuff out, it can be a little bit vexing. That plugin in particular, Asset Cleanup, the user interface is harder, I would say, but I found that it offers me more control over the actual code being loaded. Okay. So I did those things. So I have a fast theme, block plugin code where not needed. I removed poorly designed plugins. For example, I test a lot of when you display the post grid, like on a homepage of your recent posts. I tried all different kinds of paid plugins, and they were just terrible. The amount of code, they were very inefficient. So I ended up getting one from the guys at GeneratePress. So it was. Now I switch where possible to lighter weight plugins. And let's see, I have I cut down the bloat quite a bit. So once I did all those things, it made a huge difference. Of course, I did the standard best practices for images. So I use Short Pixel. I got the Short Pixel plugin. So my images are good to go. They have good compression. I don't go like crazy with it. I still like to keep a decent quality. I don't even need a CDN. When I did all those things, I got it in the 90s, and I used to be with my hosting used to be SiteGround until just recently. So once I was satisfied that I worked on the basics that needed to be addressed, I got it pretty fast. It was good, but it wasn't quite in the home. It was really close to passing Web Vitals and Search Console. Having the ads, Mediavine ads, made a little bit of a difference, and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to make this happen. I got it in the 90s, so I was pretty happy with it, but I said, can I go all the way? So I switched. I did a lot of reading, and I considered WPX, but I ended up switching to DigitalOcean with Cloudways, and on my main sites, I moved eventually to Vulture HF. I didn't have to, but I like the extra little bit of capability. So once I did that, this hosting speed took me over the finish line. Because the shared hosting, like SiteGround, SiteGround is a good, I know the opinions now are kind of not quite as great, but unfortunately shared hosting, after doing so much work, I kept seeing that the server speeds were very intermittent sometimes, or intermittent delays. It was pretty bad sometimes, actually. And just in general, it wasn't very too great. Like the time to first byte was over 300 milliseconds a lot of the time. And whereas DigitalOcean, Cloudways, it was at 90 milliseconds. And the Vulture is like in the 50s, 50 milliseconds or something.
Yeah.
So I have a faster server now, and it made difference once I got the basics right,
That makes sense. That was just the cherry on the top, essentially.
Yeah.
Is that for desktop and mobile as well, both scores?
Yes. Yeah. So
even with ads, I think that everyone struggle. Like loads of people get desktop green, but if you're running adverts, like to get it green on mobile, I think is a big achievement. So I think hats off to you for spending time to do that.
I will say this though, Mediavine, the way their ad system is coded, I think it's a lot more efficient than Ezoic. So if Ezoic, because I have a friend and I was looking at his site, he has Ezoic, the amount of stuff being loaded there, it's going to be more of a challenge. So if you got your work cut out for you. I mean, I read sometimes that they're making improvements, but there was a lot more code being loaded with Ezoic. But I tried to tell people just basically, look, try to use the right tool. Like people usually use GT metrics, and the free version is only for desktop. And I say, that's helpful for some things, but that's not what you need to go by. Use PageSpeed Insights. It'll tell you exactly what it is it's complaining about, and you need to work on that.
Yeah.
Get the basics right. Don't go around in circles. People always give bad advice. It's an option if you want to do it. It's fine. I don't care. But people try to say that all you need is NitroPack and you're good to go. But I would be paying about $70 per month for using something like NitroPack, and it's completely unnecessary if I'm willing to find out what my page speed problems are.
Yeah.
It's great if you've got a site with very little traffic, and then you can use the free version, but it doesn't really address the problems.
Yeah. Plus, once you've figured it out, you've got a repeatable setup for your other sites
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. And my bandwidth is much lower now, too, because there's not much that the file size, like a page, I have my pages now are, a lot of times they're like a couple hundred kilobytes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm using less server space, and the amount of data actually been moved, even though I have a lot of visitors sometimes, it's not that much anymore.
No.
So that was a nice side effect.
What's your go-to list of plugins these days then? Or you just started a brand new site, like fresh site, fresh install. What did you put on there?
When I started the brand new site, I just downloaded a full copy of one of my existing sites.
Okay.
And because I have a WP all-in-one migration or something like that. You can download a whole copy of a site and just upload it. And there you go. And then you just change your stuff, like your logo and colors, blah, 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 URLs.
Did you copy the content as well? Or does it...
I purposely made I copied the original with the content, and I took out the content. Okay. So I did change that. So I kind of had a kind of a template site.
Makes sense.
And that's what I did. So I didn't have to install all those plugins all over again. But
what is your go-to list though? If you had to, yeah. If you couldn't do that, like what would it be?
Sure. I would say Aztec Cleanup. I have WP Garrocket now. I've had pretty good success with that. I've been pretty happy with that overall. That helped me also. It's one of the better cache plugins. Let's see. Oh, man. That's a good question. I do use some short codes. I use short codes ultimate. I don't go too crazy with it, but I do use some of those. Let's see what else. I have AAWP, but I don't use it as much anymore. I don't use it for tables either. Let's see. I use a plugin called Short Coder, so I can use custom short codes. So okay. You can post some code. Like I have, if I manually place ads in content, instead of having to paste the stuff every time myself, I can just insert a short code I have saved. That's really useful. Okay. I have another plugin for custom CSS called Simple CSS and JS. And it gives you additional control in the paid version over where it's loaded. You can take care of that on that side. It's a pretty good one, too. I'm sure I'm forgetting. Okay. I used to use WP Forms for my contact form. But back when I started working on PageSpeed stuff, I was having this issue with ReCAPTCHA, which I was using for spam, anti-spam. But the JavaScript was always keeping my PageSpeed down for my contact page. So I ended up moving to Contact Form 7, and I used a workaround for my reCAPTCHA. So what I ended up doing, so I don't load any JavaScript at all, I was still getting a little bit of spam until I did this. So I made a little picture of I made my own reCAPTCHA image. And in Contact Form 7, you have an option where you can add like a little question, and have a little question box. So instead of having the question as text, I have my little image, my reCAPTCHA image, and you have to enter what's shown in the image. And I made my own reCAPTCHA, kind of like you see on a web page, and it's been working great. It's very, very light, very light.
Yeah, it's all these little things. Like they all these little things, I think, add up to make the big difference, right? It's not one. It's not like a magic switch. You switch one thing, and it changes it. And it sounds like you spend a lot of time figuring this out. Like, I don't know many other people who would have thought, reCAPTCHA, I'm going to make my own.
Yeah, that was just an idea that I came up with when I was somewhere else. And I thought, why don't I give this a shot?
Yeah.
You know, maybe this is a good, try to think outside the box, basically.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. I think that's been great. What's next for you then? So you're down in Mexico right now. What are your next plans for the next 6, 12, 18 months?
I think we're going to... my primary goal is going to be scaling. So adding more content. I'm going to try hiring people to help with editing the content as well as creating images kind of somewhat in the same way, fashion I do now, because I like how it looks. The user experience is really good, especially for informational content, because my new site is informational content. I know I bought quite a bit from you guys, your niche website builders content service. So that very same content, I want to put in more images in there, especially where I'm explaining something, like what's inside of a light bulb or what's inside of this, you know, how does this work? I like to break it down, make it easy to understand. I need someone to help those images. It's just too much. You can't do that all by yourself if you want to scale. So I'm trying to go through that process of scaling right now. I've learned quite a bit from John Dykstra and some other people on FatStacks forum. They're very helpful, as well as other things I've read online. You know, Ron Stefanski, he had some good ideas about some stuff too. You know, primarily scaling. I'm probably going to get ready to travel here pretty soon. I need to nail down 100% where that's going to be. A lot of that will have to do with spending less money every month on my expenses so that I can use that money to reinvest in the website.
Awesome. Okay. And what are you building towards? Is the long-term goal for this to become a, you know, publishing company that you run, or are you building these to sell them eventually and do, you know, do something else with it, start more, or like, what's the longer-term plan here?
I think a good answer, at least for the moment, because you can always change your mind later once you're further down the road. But I'm going to say both for now. I was thinking about that recently. I think that's the plan for right now. So say, let's say, for example, have a portfolio, and then eventually at some point when they're ready to sell some, you know.
That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Awesome. Is there anything that you think that I missed and you want to think might be useful for our audience?
You know, I would say that I've told people so many times, if you're at the beginning stages right now, like I once was, unfortunately, it just turns out that it's just a general rule that sad, but very few people stick with this stuff in the long term. A lot of people, a huge percentage of people just drop out. But if you really want to be successful, you need to understand that the cost of time, the opportunity cost of your time, because whatever you want to do with your life and your goals for earning money online, you need to start now and you need to keep going. It's okay if you have some bad experiences along the way, bumps in the road, but you need to keep going, because every day that you don't make progress, it costs you. You're always one step further away from your goals, and you don't know what's going to happen later. It could get harder for whatever it is you're trying to achieve. So do it now while you're thinking about it and while you have the circumstance, you know. And I would also say, take it seriously, because some people treat their side project, said they have a full-time job, they treat their side project as more of a hobby, but you can't do that. I believe that I don't know who said it originally, but you need to treat it like a business. I find it to be very, very true. You need to take it seriously, not take it for granted. You know, in myself, I've made plenty of mistakes about that. Like we were talking about productivity, time management. I realized here recently, especially, that I said, you know, I had to be honest with myself and say, I'm not doing the best I can. I don't need to be out here just lollygagging when I need to be focused and get knocking out the stuff. I need to figure out what I'm doing wrong and how I can fix it. And that's exactly what I want to do. I'm reading some books about how successful people, I learned from successful people, how they better use their time, how they're more productive. And I'll go out and be proactive, look for tools that'll help me. And if that doesn't work, that's okay. I'll find something else that does work for me. You know, positive thinking is good, but it's not enough. You need to get out there and learn, look for information, because there's so much out there. And I'll grant you that things are harder than they used to be in some ways, but the amount of information out there these days is, wow, it's really great. It really is. Yeah. You know, I listen to the Niche Website Builders podcast, for example, myself, and I learned, you know, I learned from the people you have on there and what they have to share, stuff like that. A lot of times you just simply will not get somewhere else. So yeah. I encourage people to be proactive and go out and learn, find information, try to learn from people who are successful, who have proven that they have taken steps to achieve something, and you'll learn a lot of really useful stuff from them, you know.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, especially the consistency part. I think the consistency bit is key. And it's a funny industry. You don't do any work today, but you don't see the impact on that for maybe 3 to 6 months. So it's not even, you can easily fall into the trap of, I'm not going to do nothing today, I'm not going to do anything tomorrow. And you just think, oh, this is fine. Like, everything is ticking over just as well, but it's going to come back and bite you, but it's in the future. So I think just keep that in mind as well. Like, the work you put in today, or the lack of work you put in today, is not reflected tomorrow, but probably in 6 months' time.
Oh, absolutely. I remember Don Wells has said somewhere in the past, he was talking about when he started. He said something just like that. Exactly.
Yeah. Marty, thanks for being on today. I think you've shared some awesome insights. If people wanted to reach out to you, like, where's best for them to chat to you? I know you're quite proactive in a couple of different Facebook groups and things like that. Is that the best place?
Sure. Let's see.
You don't have to reach out at all if you don't want to reach out.
I was just trying to think of
don't
some.
Don't speak to Marty.
I'm in the if people are familiar with Ben Adler, I'm in to his Facebook. I think it's some groups with him. It's called Affiliate Niche. I think it's Affiliate Niche Websites. Sorry, I've got the name wrong. His Facebook group. I'm in two with Matt Diggies. I'm in there. But you can find me in some of these groups, Facebook, for example. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. That's great. Well, thanks very much, Marty, for your time. I really appreciate it. I think our audience will take away some great insights from this. And like you say, you know, people who are listening to this, even if they just pick up one or two like tidbits of nuggets of gold, I think it's great. So yeah, I think this is awesome. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it as well.
Awesome. Good luck, Marty. We'll have you back on in another 12 months or whatever.
Awesome.
Hear how your story's gone in the next 12 months.
That'd be fun.
Awesome. Cheers, man. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.